Hello, everyone. This is Steve Lever. I'm the superintendent of schools at Octorara Area School District. And this is the inaugural, the number one, the first of its kind, the Pod Soup podcast. Now, Pod Soup is, it's really short for superintendent, so we're not giving you any soup today. But I have three guests sitting with me, Lila, Cohen, and Matt. And these are three extraordinary students here at Octorara. And I've just asked them to kind of tell you a little bit about their story. So what is so extraordinary about them? There is a United States International Young Physicist Tournament that takes place in Budapest, Hungary this year. Budapest. I think we have to say it correctly, right? In Budapest, Hungary in July 10th to 17th. Is that correct?
Yep.
And there's five people on the national team. Three of them are from Octorara. And one alternate, Bridget, who couldn't be with us today. So, Lila, Cohen, and Matt, can you tell us a little bit about this tournament? What is it? How is it run? What did you have to do? So, go.
Okay. So, essentially, there's two stages. We have the national competition, which this year we were just submitting videos. But traditionally, the way it works is that you have two main teams, a defending team and a presenting team. And the team is asked to go up and present a problem. So one of your people from Team Octorara, for say, will go up and present, say, charge meter, or one of our problems that we worked on. And they would go through, they would explain their problem, explain their solution to it, all the work that they've done, all the research that they've done. And then basically there would be a few minutes for questions from the opposing team. And then there's a few minutes of time where they get to deliberate. And then they get to argue and try to refute what you did wrong and argue why their solution or why your solution isn't correct or why theirs is better. And you have to, you're up there and you're kind of one-on-one talking with them and you're defending your work and why you made certain decisions. And so it's basically just like a little physics one-on-one here. Hence the name, like Physics Fight Club. Colloquially.
You guys call it Physics Fight Club.
Yeah, we call it Physics Fight Club. I don't know if that's like a universal thing that all the teams call it, but here in Octorara, it's Physics Fight Club. So we, you have a little fight and the judges will deliberate and they'll decide whether your work withstood the test from the other team and their intellectual probing at your work. And yeah, so it's the same kind of thing at the international competition, except United States teams are competing for spots. It's you're looking for scores to try to beat the other countries.
Yeah.
So yeah.
So how did you guys sent your videos in, and they've selected you. I guess there's a colleague from California, and one from Philadelphia. Is that right? The ones that round out the team.
Oh, so he's from New York.
New York.
He's from there's one from Stuyvesant School, and then one from Friendship Private School?
Friendship Central
in Philly.
Okay.
So yeah, it's kind of more like isolated to the East Coast of the United States. In some of the other countries, it's more of a it spreads across the whole entire country. Like Singapore, for example, it's very, very popular.
Yeah.
In Germany, but it's one of the things we'd like to improve about the United States is that it's how it spreads across the United States, and hope that there's growth for physics in the United States.
Well, thanks, Cohen. So, what's most interesting, Matt or Lila, what's most interesting about this competition for you?
I personally think that the most interesting part is the physics we're doing isn't very well researched, so this is like all stuff that we're building knowledge on. Like, we couldn't sit down and Google an answer to something. We have to sit through and do all the math and figure out what's physically happening, which is just really interesting when you're sitting there for like months on end, like, how does light work in this scenario, which is what I had to do. It was just like, I couldn't sit there and Google it and be like, oh, it's easy, it's this. It's, we have to build knowledge and work together with previous knowledge and our own sort of building on that and just come up with something new in the physics, which is awesome.
Wow. So that's what's so exciting. How many hours did you put in your project?
I'd say hundreds. I would
really?
Say there was a lot of time during the school day, after school, and at home that I would just, for hours on end, be trying to sit through and work through math or work through just a concept, an idea, and try to figure out what's happening.
Okay. So, in layman's terms, okay, talking to a guy who's not a physicist, what's the thing that you learned that blew you away that I can understand?
The thing that I learned is that when you put light, which is always in, like, unit steps, mm-hmm. when you put it in a magnet, it can slightly alter those unit steps, which is has really big implications for, like, what is happening in the light around us, which is part of the project that I was working on, was using a magnet to change the unit steps in that light mm-hmm. to see a shadow from a very similar light. Mm-hmm. And it's just really interesting, and these are the sorts of things that are used on MRIs, for example. Okay. Use the same technique of sort of changing the unit step of a fundamental particle.
So what are the implications for that? So where does that research go?
A lot of it for magnetics is in the medical field. MRIs okay. work in that way. X-rays are kind of similar, but mm-hmm. not quite. Mm-hmm. But there's just a lot of, like, ways that we can see things not just directly with our eyes that yeah. are very useful when you're working with magnetics.
Yeah. Wow. Wow. Now, Matthew, were you the one that was, you were writing computer programs for your project?
I wrote a lot of computer programs. So far, none of them have worked.
but you know, it's like Einstein who said, I can tell you 10,000 ways not yeah. to make a light bulb. Mm-hmm. So, okay, so talk about your programming.
So our big problem was we have a really complex system of, it starts out not as like a normal geometric shape. It starts out as this weird thing. And for a while, we were trying to, you know, turn, like, do it from that shape and turn it into, you know, what it actually looks like when it's flying.
Okay.
We kind of realized that's impossible, or at least very, very difficult. So what we did instead is we just took a shape and converted it in Afterthought. And we do lose some sort of inaccuracy to that,
mm-hmm.
but it makes the problem possible, and it makes it something we can still account for. And because essentially what we're doing is we have my problem works with a rubber band. And the thing about any solid is it's made up of massive amounts of atoms, more atoms than mm-hmm. you can really fathom yeah. in a human sense. And
a number so big that you can't even comprehend it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so what we did is we boil it down to a number that we can program for, which in our case is 6. We can understand 6. We can't understand 6 sextillion.
So why not 5? Why not 7? Because just had to pick one?
Yeah, pretty much.
Okay.
We needed some number, and 6 is, you know, it's a nice number.
Okay. Sounds like there must be some more of a story there, but maybe on another podcast. The real meaning of 6. So you've been writing programs, but you have largely been unsuccessful. And what are you trying to do? Trying to model for what would happen? Is that it?
Well, essentially, we're thinking of a rubber band. Like, yep. a rubber band stretches.
Yep.
And the other thing in science that stretches a lot is a spring. So we're saying each atom in this particle, which we're going to represent as 6 mm-hmm. particles, mm-hmm. has a spring between it. Okay. And they all affect each other as they move around. But this physics is very well understood, where it's, you know what the force from a spring is going to be.
Okay.
You know, given a certain force, how it's going to move, you know all that information. So you can just say, so what we do is we do something called time steps,
okay.
where we say 0.00001 seconds pass. Where are the particles now? Then another 0.00001 seconds pass. Where are the particles now?
Mm-hmm.
And you repeat this again and again and again and again. And by the time you get like an actual, you know, time that we could see in the real world, you get something that's relatively close to the answer.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's essentially how we try and model everything. And we try to take all that information and turn it into how fast is it moving, how fast is it spinning, and then, like I said, we convert that information and say, now it's traveling as a circle.
Mm-hmm. So as you guys are discussing your projects and what you're doing, in you're in physics. Was it AP physics
mm-hmm.
that you're in? So on what day had you already surpassed the AP Physics curriculum with what you're doing? Day 37, day 3, day 89?
Oh, I don't like mechanics. Yeah. So, like, E&M, like, your problem, me and your problem worked a lot with E&M, electricity and magnetism. But, and that's, like, a separate AP course. But, like, that's, like, a little bit more time to like, surpass that.
Yeah.
But it's, like, it's sometimes it's very, like, specialized. So, like, the thing about, like, AP courses is they deal with, like, such a wide range of topics. But, like, we're, like, so narrowly focused in on, like, this one point. So, like, in, like, this, like, sphere of, like, all physics knowledge, we have, like, this one sharp jump coming out that like, that's really hyper-specific to our problem.
One needle in a physics haystack.
So, like I mean, yeah, like, we're very hyper-specialized now in our one problem. It certainly has helped, like, in, like, a, like, mechanics is, like, a little bit more, like, fundamentally, like, easier to understand, like, just it's you deal with it every single day, so it's like your brain's like set up to understand it. So like it's easier to apply the concepts that are more general there into.
So you're stalling. You're stalling, thinking that maybe Doc McWaters is going to listen to this podcast, and you don't want to tell him that you surpassed him on a certain day.
Well, like, I'd say besides Lila's problem, which goes well beyond, you know, an AP course, we were kind of, you know, we never really surpassed it. We just applied it
to
a different degree.
Yeah.
So it's taking the theory and things that you would learn in there, it's actually doing something with them.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And applying hundreds of hours to that.
Yeah. Like, their problems were a little different, where they could take what we did in class and, like, make it hyper-specific and do exactly, like, one very specific application of what we did in class. I had to go home and, like, watch lectures on quantum mechanics in my free time from, like, graduate school and undergraduate
really,
school.
Which ones? Because I do that, too.
I used a lot of MITs, but... There were other ones too.
Right.
Where, like, I don't know necessarily if rubber bands would have left the realm of octaera physics, but I think once we, like, delved into quantum physics and how suddenly when they're in different fields, they change states entirely. Like, it's no longer technically counted as the same particle at all. Then it's like, well, that's not what you're going to see in a high school classroom.
Yeah. Well, what I find so fascinating about this is, first of all, just a shout out to Doc McWaters, who gives you this amazing experience of kind of going beyond what's in the classroom. Mm-hmm. Imagine if he said to you in the first day, I'm going to give you an assignment. It's not due until the end of the year. And by the way, it's going to take hundreds of hours after school. Who would line up to do that? Nobody, but you guys have.
Yeah, that was really how he presented Physics Fight Club. It was like, you're going to be spending hundreds of hours banging your head against, like, a table trying to figure out these problems, and it's going to seem, like, fruitless at some points, but then you'll have, like, these moments of bliss where, like, you've made a breakthrough or something, and it'll make it all worth it. And that's how he presented it. Like, this, like, super unglamorous time, and there was, like, the three of us were like, yeah, that's what we want to do, definitely.
Yeah, let's
just do that.
I'm all in. You make it sound so good.
Yeah. I know there was definitely a moment, like, we were just sitting in the fight room, and I turned to them, and I went, you know, if, like, 2 years ago you had said that this is what I was going to be doing with my time, I would have, like, cried on the spot. Like, I just wouldn't have wanted to do that at all, and now, like, this is what I'm thinking about most of my time, and I'd love it so much.
Well, it is a bit of a hard sell, and I think that's one of the things that really restricts the IYPT from developing in the U.S.
Yeah.
Because not only do you have to, first off, hear about it, but you also have to get the physics teacher to sign off on it and commit to doing, you know, hundreds of hours.
All that time.
You have to get the physics teacher to convince students to spend hundreds of hours. You have to, you know, the teacher himself or herself has to, you know, have the knowledge and the experience to effectively coach you. So it ends up being such a hard, you know, thing to get people into.
Yeah. It was a huge extra commitment from Doc to be able to coach us. Like, he took on managing four different problems, which was an extreme task.
Mm-hmm.
So we're all very thankful that he was willing.
So our vision here at Octorera is to empower students to build successful futures. So in what way has this enabled you to do that? Because I know, Lila, you're studying physics in college. Are you, Colin?
Yes.
And so all three of you are studying. So we haven't truly empowered you to build successful futures. What has this experience done for you? And understand, a friend of mine studied this in students, and he found that their experiences that they had, because you're traveling abroad, And what he found in studying this in the International Baccalaureate CAS program, what he found was the further students got from the event, the deeper the meaning was. And so, you know, 5 years later, it was, oh my gosh, this was a transformational experience, but they didn't necessarily see that. So I'm not expecting you to say it's a transformational experience, but what has this done to kind of launch you to where you're going?
I mean, it's definitely like a great first step into understanding. We all want to study physics, and this is physics research. It's tricky, it's difficult, you're going to be banging your head against tables, and you're going to love doing that. And that's like really the first step that we saw. And then the second like big step is that it teaches you to communicate your physics. Like, there's no way I was just going to be able to sit there and do all this physics on my own if I hadn't been having conversations with both Cohen and Matt. And then also when we go fight, we go and fight and communicate and build those skills that are going to like bring us forward into the physics world.
Yeah.
The history of the tournament itself is it was based in Russia as a way to train students how to become, you know, physicists.
Yeah.
And it's definitely retained that to today, where the way physics research works in the real world is you'll have a professor and like he'll have grad students and he'll have undergrad students. Mm-hmm. So you get this whole kind of hierarchy going on. Mm-hmm. And you know, in this case, we're more like the grad students here, mm-hmm. where we have to work on the research, but we are, you know, kind of guided. We just have to ram into the wall again and again and again, trying to find a way through it. And once you do that, you go and you present your research, and you are, you know, vehemently opposed, and you have to defend yourself. You mm-hmm. have to show, here's why we did it this way, here's why we're justified doing it this way. And after you go through this really rigorous process, you end up, you know, having taken huge, vast amounts of knowledge, narrowed it down to a specific circumstance, and, you know, kind of added something there.
So that you deal a lot with failure.
Absolutely.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I would say, like, 90% of it was failure.
Yeah,
like,
I'd say more.
Yeah, I mean, like, the majority of our time is we're working on one problem, and it's like if success was like imminently like there, I mean, we would have been done in like a week. But like this took 4 or 5 months. Like it's of like constant struggle, and like you would defeat one problem, and you'd realize, oh my God, there's a sea of problems here that are now revealed from having fixed this one thing. So it's just like just problems rolling into problems, and it's I think that's what kind of what's fun about it, to be honest, is like there's always another problem. Like if it was easy, I mean, everyone would do it, and it wouldn't be that fun. But the fact that it's like it's actually challenging and difficult has been, I think, the enjoyable aspect of it all.
Wow. So you guys are all planning to study physics in college. Tell me a little bit about your pathway from here. So you graduate, what, next Wednesday, right?
Yep.
And then
over the summer, I'm going to be attending Princeton University in the fall, but they do have like a little summer program to like get you.
Summer physics fight camp?
Kind of. It's like to meet the other students who have the same interests as you and to be like, see, you can build friendships.
Gotcha.
And then, like, because STEM majors, it's, you know, you try to make friends. That's going to be my goal, is make friends.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm planning to study physics in undergraduate and then also in graduate school and hopefully get a doctorate so that I can just keep researching physics. Like, I love doing this so much. It's a way to both, like, it's a way to utilize all of your brain. Like, you have to be creative, and you have to use past knowledge, and you have to build new knowledge, and you have to synthesize, and it's just, it's a moving experience, really.
Mm-hmm. Wow. What about you, Matt? Where does this take you?
Well, currently I'm committed to Penn State University. I originally committed for, like, physics, and I really like physics. I'm just not sure I want to go into, you know, academia.
Yeah.
Because I'm thinking more like, you know, probably engineering of some sort, mm-hmm. like structural or civil,
mm-hmm.
but I'm really excited for it. I think it's a really cool like career I've got ahead of me.
Mm-hmm. What about you, Colin?
Me? I'm going to Bucknell for physics, and I have a very similar route of like hopefully attending grad school after. I mean, so much can change in 4 years of undergrad, but I'm going to attend grad school and probably enter an academia.
Yeah.
Do something experimentally. Before like Physics Fight Club, I had actually been like dead set on going into computer science, and mm-hmm. so like that had been my passion ever since I was like 10. I'd been working with computers,
mm-hmm.
And working in the tech office and stuff for my whole entire high school time. But So certainly I want to combine those two things and work in like computational physics or something.
Okay.
But yeah, academia.
Okay.
Grad school.
So if you could say one thing to, we'll call out Doc McWaters. If you could say one thing to him, what would it be?
Thanks, man.
Yeah, thanks. I mean, I appreciate you so much for all of the effort that you've put in. It has been huge. You've guided me through and shown and like introduced me to this topic that like I had never even like I thought about physics since yeah. But like I had not been like this is what I'm gonna do. And then like here you are being this great teacher. He's a fantastic teacher. He motivates all of his students to work so hard in the class, and then out of the class he works just as hard to continue inspiring students like us to continue working with physics and create the next generation of physics students. And
mm-hmm.
that's the most invaluable thing there is continuing the line of work that you love so much.
Yeah.
So, I mean, his work there has been incredible, and I appreciate it so much.
Definitely, like, a big thanks for not only opening doors, but, like, opening doors of what we believe we can do with ourselves. Like, I know that I did not go into physics thinking that I could sit and do research for hundreds of hours. Like, I just didn't think I was capable of it. But Doc not only gives you opportunities, but helps you believe that you can achieve your goals. Like,
mm-hmm.
it's not only possible, but it's highly probable that you'll succeed.
Mm-hmm. And so there's something that I won't say who he has said it about, but I know he talks about his students this way, that he, and I suspect he's talking about you three, that you surpass his ability to teach physics. So the things that you guys tap into go beyond even his own. And, you know, that's a thing that, it's one of the reasons why people teach, is not to just impart what they know, but to see students that will actually take it further. That's what's the thing that really, really drives people. And I suspect, Doc and I haven't had this conversation, but I suspect that's a driving force for why he does what he does, because he sees you guys going so much further than he could even take you. So yeah, thanks to him for doing that. So this is it. This is the inaugural podcast. What do you think? Is it worth, should I do it with some other people?
Definitely. I think it was a,
liked it.
Good, yeah, good, because I've got a couple people lined up that before you guys all graduate next week, I want to get some additional thoughts, some people from our Career and Technology Center, and then a student who just has a lot of ideas on what we should do, and so I'm really interested in that, to hearing, and part of this podcast is really an attempt to give students a voice in our community, in our school, and so. Thank you for doing that. Thank you for being here, and we'll see you Wednesday, and best of luck next year. And I can't wait for our alumni events that we start doing, where you guys come back and tell us about the amazing stuff you do.
Thank you for having us.
All right. See you guys later. Thanks.
Thank you.